Alrighty, today's daf in Masechet Sota, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yer HaKodesh, is daf Yudchet, and I went a little bit too far yesterday, so let's start again on the fifth line, Boy Rava. Katav shtei megilot v'shtei sotot, u'machakan l'toch kos echad. So Rava has a series of questions. First of all, what would be if you were mekayim the writing of the Megillah, Lishma, and then you took two separate megillot for two separate sotot, and you mixed them in the mechika into one cup. So the question is like this. When the Torah said v'yasallah, it means that the Kohen does all of this specifically with this sota in mind. What does that mean? Does that mean the ktiva has her in mind? Or does it mean like even the mechika? So what's the din? Ktiva lishma b'inan, which is satisfied. That's a requirement that's satisfied here. O dilma b'inan ami mechika lishma, which in this case is not satisfied because it doesn't show up as being lishma since it was done generically. He's going to just dump everything into this water and it's not necessarily for her. That's my first question. My next question is that im timtza lomar, if you want to insist that we do need mechika lishma, what would be the halacha of doing mechika lishma, but then I go ahead and I now mix them? So I have the ketiva lishma, I have the mechika lishma, that is satisfied. Or is the point of all of this lishma that she would be drinking that which was katav v'nimchak lishma and not drink something that was generic because now it's mixed with things from a different Megillah, with things that were done for another woman, in which case, halav didaka shatya, halav didaka shatya. I mean, that's the question, whether the lishma means that that is what she is drinking, or does it mean that's what the Kohen is doing? I mean, that's two totally different issues. So that's a further question that I have. And then I got another question. Let's even say that in such a case, the mayim would not be kosher because obviously the din of doing it la means that in the end, each woman is treated to specifically all of the seder that was done lishma. But I ask you something else. There's two ways of understanding that. Suppose he would then go and take the mixed cup and separate it into two separate cups. And now each one of the sotot are drinking a separate cup. So the question is, could I rely on Breira in such a case or not? Now, Tosfos understands this as not meaning literally Breira. Remember that Breira usually means that we say that retroactively, based on the way things end up working out, this is what was meant to happen. Now, Tosis points out, we never do that unless it has not yet been determined. Once it's been determined, you can't change an outcome by redoing it. So in other words, if I've already established which one of these cups is for woman A and which one is for woman B, now I mix them together. It would be rather absurd to say that if I now pour them into two separate cups, we could wave a magic wand of Breira and say that we managed to get every bit that was done lishma for A into cup A, and every bit that was done for B into cup B. That doesn't make any sense. If that made sense, then it would be a great way for the OU to make a heck of a lot of money, because what would be the point of koshering everything? All we need to do is make everything all one big mess, and then take a big pot that's poured into from the mixture and say, in this pot goes all of the lard, and in the other pot goes all of the vegetable oil. And then we've got ourselves kosher vegetable oil. I mean, if you had all the yesh breira, I mean, that would be wonderful. So the meaning, therefore, of breira in this case, the way Tosfos understands it, is do we say that each one of these things is meant to be something that is not generic? But it does not mean that each step needs to be maintained. In other words, I need to do the ktiva lishma. I did the ktiva lishma. I need to do the mechika lishma. I did the mechika lishma. Once I do those things, I now no longer have Mayim Lishma, that's not the point. Not like we were thinking before. In other words, the idea over here would be that the end result is that each woman is drinking a cup of Mayim HaMa'orim where that cup had been prepared for her. But it doesn't necessarily mean that everything in that cup had gone all the way back to the Ktivan Mechika, which is no longer even visible and knowable. So maybe at that point, Brera would be enough. That's how Tosus understands it. Now, the truth is, this is a major sugya because there are places where when it comes to inyonim that are defined by Lishma, let's say Dmei Chatas or something like that, that there is a concept of actually using Brera. That accounts for the large amount of Tosfos on this daf. There's a lot of things that because of the pressures of the Chag and so on, am I wanting not to keep you, after Chag and before Chag, that I've really gone over very briefly, a lot of fascinating things that I would love to have an opportunity to spend some time on. So I'm thinking that maybe one of these days, maybe even tomorrow, I don't know, but one of these days, if we could have an extra long day so that I could throw in some of the things so we could catch up on them, because it's really a shame not to have an opportunity to talk about some of this stuff. But meanwhile, let's just finish our daf and hope for the best. So,
just saying, evening session would work better.
Okay, you can post that on there. Let's see what people would want, okay? So put that up as a question on the daf thing. Let's see. I mean, I'm sure it works better for some people and maybe not for other people. So let's take a look. Or Moshe Andel's suggestion to start earlier. We can put up those three options. Don't forget that we've got some heavy-duty issues coming up, such as Ne'ila Sechag. We can't wait forever on the Ne'ila Sechag. I would think that tonight may be the last opportunity in which we're still feeling the strong effects of an Isrucha going into, what they call a Gesher here, or in America, what they call a long holiday weekend or something. So we're still under the influence, one could say. So maybe
I just wanted to ask a brother, Ne'ila.
Yeah. So, I mean, if we're going to do that, I think we better do it before we do this. Okay, so I'll put that up also, whether people are able to spend time tonight on or this afternoon on the Ne'ila Sechag. Okay, anyway, going further. So that's how Tosus understands the question of Brera. It's sort of a borrowed terminology when we use the word Brera. Okay, so those are the questions that Rava asks. And on all of these questions, we end up with a teiku, which is very interesting because the Rambam paskins, because of this teiku, that in the event that you did use the mayim, that then the mayim were kasherim. Now, that is a little bit weird. First of all, because the imtim tzolomars, which the Rambam usually paskins like, is that each case would have been that it wasn't kosher, right? Imtim tzolomar, that it's not kosher unless you do the mechika lishma. Or it's not kosher unless you do the shtia, each one has to have their own, and so on. So why would he paskin that every one of these are good? But then there's an even bigger question. If you're talking about a teiku, then how could you possibly use this water to be bodek ha-seita? If the seita comes out alive, how do you know that the reason that she came out alive wasn't because that this water wasn't prepared properly? Because, I mean, after all, nobody's ready to tell you that this is a correct way to prepare the water. So it's an amazing psak of the Rambam, that b'diavad, that it would be kosher. It's not that he's saying b'diavad, well, then there's nothing to do, because you can't do it again, because maybe she did come out to her, but maybe she didn't, and there's no way we can be matir her, which is what you would think would be the result of such a thing. Anyway, put that in your collective pipes and smoke it. And you can all tell me an answer, post an answer. I'd be very happy. Anyway, let's go by. There is, of course, a lot of discussion of this issue in the Acharon. Okay, next, Boy Rafa. I've got another question. Hishka besiv. Mahu, what would be the din if the way that you gave her to drink would be for her to drink through a straw? Now, this is the way Rashi understands sieve. Sieve, of course, is that cellulose that's around the bottom of the palm tree, and it's very easy to turn it into a straw. So the question is whether a paper straw, so to speak, would be a proper shtia or not. The problem with Rashi's pshat is the next piece. B'shvoferet mahu. Now, b'shvoferet is basically the same thing as b'siv, according to the way Rashi's explaining it. So Rashi differentiates between the two cases because he says that paper straws are for kids and shvoferets are for he-men. Well, he doesn't say that part, but he does say that the first case is for kids. So maybe the point is that an adult woman sipping her mesota through a straw is not the derech of shtia. It's very interesting, by the way. Is there a value in somebody who needs to drink on Yom Kippur to drink through a straw instead of drinking normally? Because since the shtia, if it's not considered to be derech shtia, so then it wouldn't be the same iser. There's actually some achronim that paskin based on this Gemara that maybe there's an advantage because it's not derech shtia. So mao derech shtia b'kach or ein derech shtia b'kach. Again, teiku boi ravashi. Suppose some of the mayim that contained the Megillah in it spilled, but there's some of it is left. So does the woman have to drink from the entire mayim, or is it okay if there's some left for her to be chosen? What's the din? Teiku amar Rabbi Zera amar Rav. Let's get back to the strange psukim. Remember that the whole thing begins with Hishbiyahu da Kohen, and there the first shvua that it mentions, it doesn't say anything about an Allah. It just says a shvua. So that means that the Kohen makes her swear, are you telling the truth? That's basically the only issue. Are you telling the truth? Then, after he says, and if, in fact, you had been nitmeit, and then that's going to be what happens to you when he describes to her the Shvuat Halah, and so on, it mentions there again, and that was a question Rabbi Meir said, we should skip that part in terms of the Ksiva, but why is it there? Why do we have another description of a Shvuat? This time it doesn't just say Bishvua. It says Ishbia Akoinat Aisha Bishvuat Ha'Allah. Well, I mean, why does it mention the Shvua two times? So Mshteshvuat Amora Pisota Lama. So therefore I suggest, says Rav, that Achat was Kodem Shinim Chaka Megillah. So once we make her swear before doing the Mechika, and once is before she drinks it after the mechika. Matki flo Rava, but that's not what it says Rava. I mean, we have both of the Hishbiyahu ta Kohen before it says beferish v'katav la Kohen, etc. Umachak. So how can you say that one is after? That really is very much against the old seder of the parsha. That can't be the point. Therefore, Elama Rava, I say that the point is that one is a shvua and one is a shvuat ha'Allah. I mean, it's quite clear that those are not the same things, right? So that's the point. Achat shvua sheyesh ima Allah, ve'achat shvua she'ein ima Allah. Well, I mean, what exactly does that mean? What do you mean when you say a shvua sheyesh ima Allah? Well, how is that, like, worded exactly? Omrav amar mamarav. Well, it would mean that the Kohen would say to her, I'm being mashbia you, that what you said is true, and that lo nitmeit, because, and this is part of what you have to swear to, is that im nitmeit, that in this event, if you had been nitmeit, then the mayim yavobach, mayim, and so on and so forth, lan pil beten, and so on. Amar Rava, that's not a shvuat Allah, excuse me, that's two different issues. Over there you're saying it's the same shvua, and then you're saying separately, and by the way, im nitmeit, I mean, they're not together. That means the Allah is standing on its own, and the Shvuah is standing on its own. Allah l'chuda kaima, and the Shvuah l'chuda kaima. Ela amarava. I'll tell you what the point is. Mashpieni alayach she'im nitmeit yavoba. This is a new Shvuah. This Shvuah is that if, in fact, you were nitmeit, then you are makabal that with the Shvuah that all of these alot should affect you. Amr Fasha doesn't make any sense. There's no shvua then. I mean, you're telling me that the entire thing that she has to say over here is a main to the Olot with the Shvua. Well, that's not called Shvua and Allah. That's called an Allah. Where's the Shvua? The Shvua seems to be a reference to what it is that her behavior was. I want you to swear as to the veracity of what you were saying. And then there's a separate part that means that there's an Allah. But here there's no Shvua at all. Elo Amaravashi, it means Mashbi'ani Alayach Shalonit Meit. And in this case, part of the Shvua is that ve'im nitmeit, not she'im nitmeit, but that you are mekabelet on yourself, that this shvua shalom nitmeit is in the context of your acceptance of the consequences, which we didn't say before. Ve'im nitmeit yavo'u bech, which means that we have a completely different level of her personal sense of responsibility and consequences when she takes the shvua on herself. And this brings us to our Capitan, who we hope is present behind that name. Yes, we are not to be disappointed this morning. Long may he ride the waters, but not these waters.
Glub, glub, glub.
What is the meaning of that closing part of the pasuk? Va'amra ha'isha, amen, amen. Why is she repeating this amen? So, what do they refer to, these two amens? Amahi omeret amen, amen. So, the pashtus would be amen on the part which is the Allah, and amen on the Shavu'ah. However, it also means amen mi'ish zeh, amen mi'ish acher. That I also accept upon myself that not only did I not sleep with this guy that you mentioned in your kinui, but I also didn't have relations with anybody, even someone else. Now, well, first let me finish the mission. I'll explain to you. Amen shalo satiti arusa unesua. So she's also saying, again, even though he wasn't mekana her, that while we were in a state of erisin, before we had actually been fully married under the chuppah, but I'm telling you now that I also didn't sleep with anybody else during that period, which would have asered you on me. Now, this idea is obviously not part of the Iker Parsha. And from here we learn out that there's a concept, which we've spoken about many times before, which is called Gilgul. Gilgul Shvua means that you can, once you're giving someone a Shvua that they have to respond to, you can include in that Shvua things that you would not have been able to make them swear of up front. And this is very nogea also, the Shvuas that are done in Dine Mominus. Here we're talking about the Shvua of the Sotah, so that even though you as a husband would not have been able to ex post facto make a shvua on what had happened while she was an arusa to you, but if you say that, if you mention that, then she would have to include that in the shvua, and when she says amen, she would be saying amen to your Gilgul shvua, which could include even the time of erisin. So now the question is, once we've already explained that the amen, amen, is a reference to Barnea, you know what? I think that my problem with my voice is not hydration. I think I have a problem. I'm literally losing my ability to speak properly. It must be some kind of polyp on my, but I don't think water is going to affect it in any way. I just realized that over Shabbos. It's just been a continuous degradation. I'm going to have to look into and take care of, but I don't think, I mean, I'm happy to keep thinking.
Hydration is important for many, many things.
No, I know, but it isn't important every 3 seconds, right? The Barnea's trigger on hydration, there we go. Barnea's trigger on hydration seems to have finished Gavi off. He's gone. That's what happens when you drink too much boost, Akiva. So it's fine to drink every half hour and every hour, but not every 3 minutes. Barnea's trigger is any kind of hoarseness, which I can no longer get rid of at all. So there's some other source of the hydration. Okay.
Rebbe still has to pull the up.
So the question is, how can I learn so many things out of an extra amen? If I've already explained the amen as meaning amen to the Allah and amen to the Shvuah, how could we derive the concept of Gilgul Shvuah from something that is an extra? There's no extra amen here. So it's very interesting that Tosfos is not here, but Tosfos in Kiddushin suggests that actually from one amen, I would have already understood that the amen is on everything that the Kohen had said, which would even include ish zeh or ish acher. Why? Because since it says in the parasha, tachat ishech, because it says tachat ishech. So in other words, any type of adultery, tachat ishech, would be included. So all of that would have been included in one amen. That means that the second amen, the way Tosfos understands it, is coming to include Gilgul Shvuah. And that would mean that the first part in the Mishnah that says, mi ish zeh, amen mi ish acher, doesn't require the husband to insist on it as a Gilgul. That's how he's understanding it. Because he's already accepted everything that was written in the parsha. The next part, shalosa titi arus or nesua, or let's say that her husband had died, and now she's married to the Yavam, so he can have her swear that she was not while she was a shomer at Yavam, which is the equivalent of the Arusa, so to speak, in the case of the original marriage, so that I did not sleep with anybody while I was a shomer as Yavam, nor while I was actually married to you after the Yavam. Amen shelo nitmeti, ve'im nitmeti yavovi. This is obviously not adding anything, right? So Rashi explains, this just means that the Mishnah is now being mefarish what it means when it says amen to the Allah and amen to the Shvuah. It's a little bit weird, but I mean, what else could it mean? Fine. Rabbi Meir Omer, it means an amazing thing. It means amen shelo nitmeti and amen shelo atamei. According to Rabbi Meir, these mayim hama'orarim remain in her system. So that if at any point in the future she ends up sleeping with some guy, the water is going to kill her. Oh, man, that's a tough situation to be in, right? So according to Rabbi Meir, he can actually have the mayim work on the future because amen would be, I will not be mittameh in the future. Hakol shavim, but everybody agrees that certainly he can't make it tonight. Well, I want to know whether you've been sleeping around when you were a kid. And again, that's none of his business. So you can't make her swear about something before the Arison and not swear about after we get divorced. So even though she does, it's possible we could talk about while we're married, but once she gets divorced, then there's no such thing as his still being able to impact her outside of their marriage. So lo alachar shetit garesh. Now, suppose she actually had been with some lover and they were together, however, after a divorce. Now, he takes her back and in the second marriage. So what would be the din? Can he then make a t'nai about that? So that's, he cannot say what we're saying, Yivali about the Rebbe Meir. He cannot say that I make you swear now that even if we do get divorced and then we get remarried, that in that case, the mayim should be bodek. No, because the klal is only a relationship that will make her asura on her husband is included in the shvuah. Now, let's imagine a situation where she got divorced and was sleeping around with somebody, even with this guy, after the divorce, and then she gets remarried. Does that make her asura on her husband because of machzir grushato? No, because the only case of machzir grushato is where she was nitmate with an arayas. But over here, if you don't have an erava, so then there's no way just having casual relations after a divorce does not answer a woman on her husband. I mean, obviously, if he's a Kohen, then you have the other issue about the Yisrei Kahuna. But to a regular guy, if he remarries his wife, it's none of his business if she was sleeping around during the period of the divorce, because it won't answer her on him. And he's only able to do this old sota business on those relationships that would cause him to be over on an Isser sleeping with her. And in this case, it wouldn't be. So the rule is, Zakla, kol shetiba el, v'lo hayta asura lo, lo haya mateima. In the event that there is such a relationship and it still wouldn't have answered her on him, he cannot make this part of what it is that she has to be nishpan. So it's not part of the seita. Omer of Amnuna, I have a wonderful proof that a shomeret yavam who was mezana with somebody else becomes asura to the yavam. So here's the case. They were married. Her husband dies. Her husband, and without children, obviously, her husband has a brother. And now she's waiting 6 months until we get the yibum done. During those 6 months, she did have relations with other people. Well, says Rabbi Nuna, I'll prove to you from the Mishnah that she is now asura to the yavam, and he's not allowed to marry her. Because that period of the Shomeret Yavam is basically the equivalent of the Arusa. How can I prove it? Because Midiktan, since the Mishnah says that when she says Amen, Amen, it includes the fact that she can, he can make her swear that while you were Shomeret Yavam, that you hadn't had relations with anyone, Uknusa. Now, if you're going to tell me that I, Rav Amnuna, am correct, and that Bishlama, if she is Asira, that if she would have had relations with others, she would have become Asura to the Yavam, that would explain why he can make her take a Shvua. But if, even if she had had relationships with another guy, it would not have asked her to the Yavam, how could he take her and force her to swear about this if the Mishnah says Beferish that the klal is kol she'ilu tiba evelote asura lo lo yamad ne'alav. In the event that such a relationship had taken place and would not have made any difference, so then he cannot make her swear. So then how can he make her swear that a shomeres yavam, she didn't sleep with anybody, must be clearly that a shomeres yavam is indeed asura to him. Ha! Beautiful proof. Amri b'ma'arav and Eretz Yisrael, they say it may be a beautiful proof, but that's not true. Let the ochetak of Rav Amnuna anyway. Why? Because even though the Mishnah adds Shomeret Yavam Uknusa, it could be going a libid to Rabbi Akiva. Remember that Rabbi Akiva Shita is that every chayve lavim are considered to be the equivalent of arayas, because he holds ein kedushin tovsim b'chayve lavim. Now, by definition, a Shomeret Yavam is not allowed to sleep with anyone. That's the meaning of Shomeret Yavam. Lo tehe eshetameit hachutza liizar, which is an iser lav. So if she had relationships with anyone, then according to Rabbi Akiva, those would be the equivalent of nitmeit of an erva, and therefore she would indeed be asura on the Yavam, and Rav Amnuna's diak would be correct. The problem is, we don't paskin like Rabbi Akiva. And therefore, Rav Amnuna's point may be well taken. But it's only well taken in the context of a Mishnah on Libet Rabbi Akiva, and therefore it's not Negei Lahalacha. That's the point. Now, according to him, therefore, Mashvi Laki Erva. Now the question is, Boyi Rabbi Yirmiyah, how about when she was married to him during a first marriage, which had ended in divorce, and then they became, again, man and wife for the second marriage, and during that marriage, he's Mekana her. And the question is, now that she's about to take the Shvuah for the second marriage, can he now make her swear that she did not have any kind of adultery during their first marriage? Or what about a Yavam? Would a Yavam be able to add into the Shvuah that she did not have relations with anyone while his brother was alive and married to her? Because, after all, the Yibum is an extension of that marriage, right? Tashma. Well, you could get the answer to that from the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Zakla, kol shetiba el velote asura, lo ayamat ne'ima. Now, that implies very clearly that in the event that it's a type of relationship that would have asured her, he is able to include that in the Shvua. It becomes part of the Gilgal Shvua. So, in this case, Hachinami, the Matna. Because if it was Asira, then he would be able to be masa. And in these cases, obviously, if she had been carrying on with another lover while they were married the first time, she becomes permanently asura to her husband. And therefore, of course, he can make that condition in the Shvuah as a Gilgal. Same thing is true, as we saw in the Mishnah before, that if a woman had committed adultery while she was married to the man who now died and leaves her to the Yavam, the din is that choletzet v'lo mityabemet, so she's asura to him. So therefore, he can make her swear that you're not asura to me. And therefore, he could say, I want you to add into your shvuah about the kinoy that I made, I want you to add the fact that you didn't sleep with anyone during the time you were married to my brother while he was alive. Therefore, you see clearly that you can add that in. Rabbi Meir, Aymer, an amazing kiddush. Amen shelo nitmeti in the past, and amen shelo atame in the future. Tanya, don't misunderstand that. I mean, that certainly does not mean that when Rabbi Meir said, amen that I will not become tmei'ah, that means that if she will become tmei'ah, so then she will die now and she won't become tmei'ah. No, that is not what it means. And that is one of the time travel issues of the contradictions of time travel. I mean, if Lamaisa Rabbi Meir was saying it would work now, so then how would she become tmei'ah? So then she would be in a state of constant oscillations. Wow, we could have used her as Schrodinger's cat. So no, that's not what Rabbi Meir actually meant at all. What Rabbi Meir meant was that you could make a shvuah that if, in fact, you will end up sleeping with somebody, that at that point, kishatitama, the mayim are ma'arinota, these water comes back up in her mouth, uborkinota, so she gets an automatic instant bedikas soita if she goes ahead and sleeps with this guy. You would not want to be this woman's lover, let me tell you. Boy, Ravashi. Mao shiatna adam anisu in ha'acharonim, can he actually make her swear not just about her having adultery in the course of this marriage, but even if they get remarried, if I ever get remarried to you, then this current drinking of the mayim should work during our second marriage. This guy is very suspicious. Okay, so he's got it all worked out now. Can he do that? Do we say that hashtami aloha sirale? Do we say, look, I mean, the point over here is there's no way to make her asura to him in the course of this marriage based on something that's going to happen in a future marriage. Or can we say that since at that time, if he took her back after Gerishin, at that time she would become Asura, so that's included in the list that Rabbi Meir says that you can make a Tanai of a Gilgal for the future. Does that mean for the future of this marriage, or does it mean for the future of any marriage that we have? Well, Tashma. The Mishnah says everybody agrees. Hakol shavim shelo haya matneima lo akodem shetitares velo al achar shetitgaresh. So you cannot make any kind of tnoim of any type of behavior before that behavior would have affected you. And this is true whether it was before you actually had kedushin and after the time that you had been megarisher. Now, if after the gerishin, she would have been nistra le'echad v'nitmeit, and then he takes her back. So, lo haya matne. That's what he cannot make a tanai on. But what does that imply? It implies that if first he had remarried her, and then she would have now had relationships with this guy, that you could have included, because the Mishnah speaks out that the relationship after the gerushin before the remarriage you cannot include, because only a marriage to another person will aser a woman to her husband, a Yisraeli, to remarry. But any type of relations that are not part of marriage, they do not aser her. But what does that mean? Since the Mishnah spoke out that it's only during the time of the divorce between the marriages, mashma, that if the divorce and remarriage had taken place, and then she was bizana, that then he would have been able to include that. So you see that, Elibit Rebbe Meir, what we're talking about is not only the future, but even the future in a future marriage. That proves it. Tana Rabbana, Zot Torat HaKana'ut. So whenever we have the concept of Torat, it means that there is multiplicity of the Torah, because it says over here the Torah is the same no matter how many kana'ot there are. And therefore, we have a limud that a woman can be shota v'shona. So if he gives her another kinoi, and again she does another stira, so then she's going to be drinking again the mesota for every time that this happens. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it says zot. Zot means once. Ina isha shota vishona. Now, I'm Rav Yehuda now. Let me tell you something. That there was actually once a maisa, and Nechunya Chofer Shichin was meid that a woman is shota vishona, and an edus is something. This means that this, he was mekabel as a halacha, and that means that I cannot literally mean what I said, that zot means she'll never drink twice. So kibalnu eduto, but only if we're talking about shnei anashim avalo beish echad. If she marries another person, and that other person again gives her a kinui. So zot, the same husband, is unable to be makana her again. But another husband can. So there is indeed kena'ut on the woman, and there's a zot that has to be the same husband. So kibalu eduto, if she's got two different men. Avalobi ishachat. Okay, so far we have two shitot. Can the same husband be makana her? According to Rabbi Yehuda, only a different husband can be makana her. But there's yet another approach, because the chachomim omrim, Ein ha'isha shota v'shona, bein b'ish echad, bein b'shnei anashim. There is no repetitive kana'ut at all. Okay, so now let's take a look at how each one of these shitot understands the psukim. Because on the one hand it says kana'ut, but Torah the kana'ut, which is bashma, that it is repeatable. And on the other hand it says zot. So how does each one explain the other's approach? The Tanakama Nami. Doesn't it say zot? It says specifically that there's got to be a limit. So how can the Tanakama apply that word? When is there zot? And even these Rabbanan Batroi, it says Torata Kena'ut. So, I mean, you can't just forget about it. And the Tanakama seems to be saying, there's no case where you can't make her again drink from the Mayamama Orim. And the Tanoi Batroi, these Rabbanan, they seem to say there's no case where you can, whether it's two different people or the same people. Omar Rava, wait a second. How about a case where we're talking about four different males that are involved, okay? Because ultimately, there's multiplicity of cases over here. We have husband A and lover A. We have husband B and lover B. Now, in that case, if we've got four people that are involved, nobody argues. And if we've only got the same two people involved, also nobody argues. Now the question is, if we've got three people involved, okay, it's a little bit more complex than you had it. So look, if we're talking about the same husband and the same lover, so be'ish echad u'bo'el echad, nobody believes that you can make her drink again for the same person you suspected her of before, and now you make her go through the whole thing again. That is the zot, and she does not go through it for the same guy twice. That's for sure. Furthermore, if you've got two husbands and you've got two separate lovers, nobody argues that of course you can make her drink. One has nothing to do with the other. This is a new husband. This is a new marriage. This is a new person that we're giving the kina to. Obviously, why would that have anything to do with the other one? That's Torat HaKina'ot. That, yes, is Tichtiv Torat. So where do we have the machlokas in? Where we've got three people involved, which would mean you have one husband and two possible lovers, or you've got two husbands, and both of them are talking about the same person that's been stalking her. So the Tanna Kamma holds that the word Torah includes all cases except one. Which one? The one which the same husband and the same lover. So Zot is coming only to be Mamayit, Ishachad, Uboel Echad. Whereas the Rabbanan Batroi, they say just the opposite. The Zot is coming to exclude all cases except for the one that Torah Takanaut is coming to be Marba, which is the most reasonable to be Marba, where you have two separate husbands and two separate marriages, and you have two separate lovers, and nothing has anything to do with what happened before. So there it's telling me, Zot Torah Takanaut, that this woman, despite the fact that she's already gone through this hell once, can be put through it again by another husband and a different object of suspicion. So that's the point. So Rabbanan Batroi, Savrei Torah, is Marba Shnei Anashim v'Shnei Bo'alim. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, no, actually, the Torah is Memayat two cases, and the Zot, the Torah rather is Marba two cases, and the Zot is Memayat two cases. So therefore, the Zot is Memayat where you have, obviously, a husband with the same suspicions, that's not included. Nobody holds that as included. And furthermore, it also excludes the same husband with two separate suspicions. So the same guy, according to Rabbi Yehuda, cannot be Mashke. And that's how he explained the Nechunya Chofeshichin, Eidos. The word Torah is Marba two cases, namely the obvious case where you've got a separate marriage, and it's also, which is two husbands and two people, but it's also coming to be Marba, two husbands, even if it's the same suspected adulterer. Hadran Allah Hayamevi. Wonderful.